Raw Magic. The 9 Principles of Living in Natural Magic. Principle number 1. Grace. This is the story of John Newton, a sea captain who was intimately involved in a remarkable incident that occurred in the year 1748. Back in that time, the ships had big galleys made of wood, all handcrafted. Each ship was like a work of art, with all the sails and ropes were made of hemp. These sailing ships were not only true works of art, but free energy machines that were powered by the gifts of the wind. When traveling across the vast oceans in those days, powered by large square-rigged sails, dependent on wind and weather, a captain couldn't really know what was going to happen on those journeys, but rather had to be guided by feeling. Captain Newton used to sail from London, heading south down the coastlines of the Old World, to pick up his cargo, and then would turn to sail to the New World across the ocean. It was during one particular journey, about halfway across the Atlantic, that he noticed that the swells were starting to increase, causing the ship to rock and sway unusually. Captain Newton began to sense trouble ahead. The swells started getting bigger, and then the ocean became choppy. The wind picked up, and Captain Newton realized that perhaps he was a little late in the season for an Atlantic crossing, and that there could be a major storm ahead. The conditions continued to get worse and worse and worse. Now, back in those days, the ship's wheel, the steering column of that vessel, had to be held at all times, because if let go, the rudder would turn completely left or right, causing a ship to spin one way or the other, and to start going in a circle. So there had to be a man on deck to stand at the ship's wheel at all times, no matter what the weather or what the situation, and that was usually the captain. And so this is where Captain John Newton found himself that day, on the deck, as the storm began to set in, holding on to the wheel of his ship. As conditions continued to worsen, he had his men climb up the ship's tall masts and pull down all the sails. Now, in that kind of a situation, as the waves start to increase in height and occasionally spill over the top of the ship, it was common for crew members to be sent down below and tie themselves to parts of the ship, because if the ship were to come apart in the storm, at least each man would have something to hold on to in the ocean. An interesting thing in this case, a thing we have purposely kept hidden until this point, was the cargo of John Newton's ship. Below the deck, one would not find wine, olive oil, or textiles. Below the deck were over 100 people chained to the floor, a living, breathing cargo. Captain John Newton was a slave captain in the business of transporting slaves. Based in England, he would sail from London, stop in Spain for supplies, then travel all the way down to present-day Ghana, Africa, where he would pick up his cargo. He would cross the Atlantic to North America to drop off his human cargo, and then sail back across the ocean to London in a protracted triangular route. Below the deck, these people were bound in chains to the floor of the ship. They could hardly move or do anything at all, and now they were subject to the rising swells and resulting seasickness, which soon turned into 10-foot and even occasional 20-foot waves, crashing over the sides of the ship and spilling huge quantities of icy cold seawater on top of these Africans. And on this trip, this galley of human cargo was in a lot of trouble. After pulling all the sails down, Captain Newton sent all his men down below. Large quantities of water were by then spilling into the ship, and the captain feared absolute and final calamity. The ship was breaking up. It was all he could do to actually hold on to the ship's wheel, and so he had his second in command come up and chain him to it. Because if the ship began spinning, it would be doomed by the onslaught of swells. The storm became torrential. It rained so hard that Captain John Newton could hardly even see what was in front of him, let alone direct the ship perpendicular into the swells to avoid a deadly parallel slap by one or more 20-foot waves, which would quickly bust the ship's frame apart. And interestingly enough, these people down below who were chained to the floor of the ship and who could see nothing of what was going on, jarred and jerked on the ocean with torrents of ice-cold salt water dumping on them every few minutes. These people, instead of screaming, crying, yelling, wailing, demanding, began to sing together what sounded like a hymn or a prayer. And that prayer came from the Aum languages, originating all the way back in ancient Egypt. The song had no lyrics, just tones. They sang so loud that Captain Newton heard the ancient hymn, even over the roaring sound of that wind and rain, in what was clearly deteriorating into hurricane conditions. Over and over they delivered it like a mantra, an affirmation, while the conditions on that deck became so intense that John Newton, as he stood lashed to the wheel of the ship, began to sing too. Just to keep his sanity, he began to make up lyrics that he created that very moment, fitting them to the song he heard coming up from the enslaved people below. At the climax of that whole evening, when the rain was so torrential and he so exhausted that he could barely stand and hold on to the ship, chained to the wheel, he was only able to continue on because of the power of the souls of the people down below. They continued to sing in spite of their captivity, their distance from home, and their being on the brink of death. At that moment, Captain John Newton swore that if he made it, if they all made it, he would let them all go, returning his shipping licenses and become a minister. Well, Captain John Newton made it through that dark night of the soul. Everyone on that ship weathered that death-defying experience. They survived the storm. The sails were put back up, and, as the story goes, they turned the ship around, set sail back to Africa, and John Newton let everybody go. Then Newton sailed back to London, turned in his shipping licenses, became a minister, and wrote down the lyrics of the still present and well-tuned song that guided him through that stormy night, which he began to preach in his church. The song is called Amazing Grace. It's an ancient African prayer with English lyrics. Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found. Was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear, the hour I first believed. Through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Tis grace has brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. The Lord has promised good to me, his word my hope secures. He will my shield and portion be as long as life endures. Yes, when this flesh and heart shall fail, and mortal life shall cease, I shall possess within the veil a life of joy and peace. The earth shall soon dissolve like snow, the sun forbear to shine, but God who called me here below will be forever mine. Captain John Newton's story flows down through the ages due to its power to touch our soul, the very core of our humanness. The story touches archetypal soul powers of inspiration based on courage, will, song, compassion, and joining together as one human family. It lights the path and guides us through all the pages of this book. It continually informs us that no matter what situation we face, there is a way out. There is an X factor that can be invoked through the power of grace. The time-tested ancient phrase states, "It ain't over until it's over." When we're shackled underneath that ship, all options are not lost. As long as we live and breathe, we can become aware that we always have a choice. As ice-cold ocean water is dumped on us, we can whine and complain and point fingers, or we can turn towards grace, love, beauty, and the power of our souls. Interestingly enough, through the influence of the heart, channeled in communication through song, we are also able to direct soul power to our ship's captain, who is totally and previously unconscious of his crimes. And through that heartfelt communication, an amazing grace can give him the strength to make it through the night, transform his being, turn the ship around, and save instead of destroy lives. This story is extremely deep and metaphorical. When the choice was before those people, they could have responded with any emotion, rage, despair, terror. But what they chose was love, beauty, and dignity in the form of a song prayer directly from the heart. A song prayer so monumental that it saved all of them and still touches us even today. Will we allow our soul to sing its song? Every human being alive today, modern or tribal, primal or over-domesticated, has a soul that is original, natural, and above all indigenous in one way or another. Like all indigenous peoples today, that indigenous soul of the modern person has either been banished to some far reaches of the dream world or is under direct attack by the modern mind. For there to be a world at all, every indigenous, natural thing must start singing its song, dancing its dance, moving and breathing according to its own nature, saying its name, manifesting simultaneously its secret spiritual signature. That's from Martin Prechtel, Secrets of the Talking Jaguar. The captain of our ship, according to at least one perspective, is the modern ego mind. And that ego is currently sailing us into big trouble. We are faced with a choice. And we do have to choose, because even not choosing is a choice. At any moment we can choose to align with our destiny, our mission, to allow the song of our soul to come forth and create miracles. The story shows us that. From barbarism to benevolence, from cruelty to kindness, from ignorance to grace, from murderer to minister. And this is the choice we have to make, because every one of us right now is on a vessel in a storm, lashed to the wheel. What we call upon today is Amazing Grace, because it has come to that point. What is going on today is so intense on every front, politically, ecologically, physically and psychically, with the assault on the earth through nuclear power plants, the chemtrails in the sky, the wars, the political irresponsibility, usury, charging interest on money, and corporate greed, that it leads us to continually ask the question, what are we going to do about this? We can always select the miracle of the heart, even in spite of all that's going on. The situation is not nearly as intense as being an unwilling passenger on that ship in 1748, seasick, chained to the floor in a torrential storm, not having eaten for a week, not being able to look outside, and barely able to see each other. As our friend Riley Martin says, we are all of royal blood and can, at any time, decide that we are going to go back to that level of majesty, that noble level of grace. It takes practice. But the archetypal movement from brutal slave trader to minister of love is the challenge we are being asked to face. Soul power. Our history is truly a story of all souls in this quadrant of the universe. This is the shamanic perspective on it all. The story of the human soul had, primarily until this time, been a conflict between the natural will of the soul, the preordained calling, career, mission, dharma, and the potential misactions of the ego mind, imposed rules, conformity, and false identities. This past conflict had been intimately connected to the cause and root of all disease, all neuroses, all dysfunction. In many cases, the ego mind had been hijacked and unknowingly programmed, and had functioned in a disharmonious way, much of the time unconsciously. Now, thanks to the great opening in the technology of human potential and the simultaneous overall peril of the individual and planetary situation, individuals are dropping the old programs, opening their heart, activating their mission, and using their ego mind as a tool directed by their heart instead of the other way around. A new human is emerging. The superhero. The superhero is driven by one single, all-unifying energy, the propulsion of who they really are. Superheroes feel their position in the eternal garden as their souls are planted, seed-like, in God's eternal soil of inspiration. Rooted in a true sense of self, grounded in the fertile earth of compassionate, breath-filled love and wonder, the superhero stretches out shoots and leaves from its trunk and branches and honorably, courageously, in an enlightened, empowered way, guided by grace, links roots with other soul-centered beings and offers flowers and fruits of thought, words and actions to the cosmos. You are about to learn, if you didn't already know, that the quintessential battle between the archetypal forces of good and evil for possession of soul power is taking place against a backdrop of jaw-dropping, infinite cosmic magnitude. The fences around the arena within which we had hitherto defined ourselves have been dissolved. The latest round of revelations regarding our position in the cosmos, relative to other worlds and their inhabitants, has delivered undeniable evidence that utterly redefines the playing fields of life. It is no longer about competing aggressively and selfishly in a material world merely to survive. That awareness program and the attitudes that go with it are obsolete. Now, the power of the Almighty calls for the activation of the superhero who completely aligns with their individual soul mission, unleashing an explosion of soul power into the cosmos, an explosion fueled by love, laughter, forgiveness, compassion, gratitude, wonder, and innocent perception, grounded in kindness, the most powerful alchemical blend in the universe. The energy that we call soul power is the ur-cause of all creativity, of all life, all imagination. More seminal than atomic energy, more propulsive than any rocket. It is the power that properly replants the great forests, cleans up the oceans, develops and implements quality-enhancing free energy technologies, builds the bridges across the eons, travels the cosmos and elects to be a galactic citizen who lives in awe. Once we align the will of our soul with our actions, we begin to immediately live in natural magic. We more and more embody the effervescent state of amazing grace. Every single one of us has her or his own secret spiritual signature. And the shamans say that this is the era in time for every one of us to start singing that song, expressing her or his unique mission. So it is the time to listen within and remember our song, to remember who we are. Somewhere inside you, you know who you are. You are a noble cosmic being, filled to overflowing with unlimited potential, creativity, joy, and capabilities equal to every miracle, past, present, and future. This is the time for action. Now is the best time ever. It looks like reality is heading to heaven and hell at an alarming rate, concurrently. We observe both the continuing gradual decline of consciousness into death sleep, and simultaneously, an invitation to play our part in the greatest love story that's ever been told. Remember that the choice is ours, every moment, to align consciously with the forces of natural goodness, which are lifting the heavy weight of ignorance from humanity's tired and aching back. Through action, acts of love, kindness and forgiveness, through attitudes of compassion and innocence, by opening to the mystery, by sailing under the wing of amazing grace, you are becoming your very own soul-powered superhero. This is something to be realized constantly, all the time, again and again, forever. Amen. The X Factor. Collectively, we hold a vision of paradise on Earth. We perceive that the way to get there, the actual strategy at this moment in time, is based on nothing less than a miracle. We know that there's one wild card that's always available any time, and it is the phenomenon of spontaneous healing, the X Factor. The Earth can be spontaneously healed, just like a person can. People have been and continue to be spontaneously healed. It happens every day of the week, all year long, all over the world. We hold the feeling of spontaneous healing close to our hearts, and through that awareness, we move away from more mind-dominated aspirations and open our beings to the miracle, to the grace of God, to the X Factor. No one knows what is going to happen to our spinning planet. No one knows what our ultimate fate will be. No one knows if we are going to make it or not. In the midst of a world in chaos and utter transformation, we align with the unknown, the impossible, the improbable. From here we will see how the story is to unfold. It's going to be a big surprise. It always is. The best world ever. Have you ever written down a goal and then suddenly it happened? But it happened in a completely different way than you could have predicted. We practice the idea that every day is the best day ever. After a few of those best ever days in a row, you cannot invent how it could get better. You couldn't know. But the Creator knows how it could get better and categorically delivers that to you all the time. This phenomenon occurs outside mind-dominated consciousness. It can only be appreciated in the heart. The whole idea here is the best ever, the use of those words specifically. Why are those words important? Because your mind cannot quite wrap itself around a continuing series of best days ever. Your mind cannot figure out a way how it could get better. An assumption is built into the language that automatically turns the result over to the Creator to deliver in miraculous fashion. So what these two authors are really after, and what we invite you to be a part of, is actually a complete picture of paradise on earth, a miracle. Our goal is to create, through the grace of God, the best world ever. Alien awareness. There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than I dreamed of in all your philosophy. William Shakespeare. We shall no longer hang on to the tales of public opinion or to non-existent authority on matters utterly unknown and strange. We shall gradually become experts ourselves in the mastery of the knowledge of the future. Wilhelm Reich. It appears, based on all the evidence, that we are not the only tenants in the building. The concept of human solitude in the universe is a well-crafted neurosis, the destructive results of which are self-evident. Consciousness of every sort and variety seems to be doing all it can to occupy every peak and valley of reality. The situation on planet Earth and at all levels of perception has always been and will continue to be standing room only. As a point of reference, our friend Riley Martin has been a leading figure in the realm of extraterrestrial phenomena since 1953. His revelations concerning intelligent beings from outside our planetary sphere are deeply relevant to the current planetary situation. Riley's direct contacts with foreign spacecraft are worth your review. If you are an individual who is immersed in isolation consciousness, we recommend that you suspend judgment until you can feel that contact with greater intelligence than ours is at least a remote possibility. Then, at that point, read on. Awareness is the key. The grace that we sail under the wing of is much deeper and broader than we could believe. In fact, we can only understand the implications of it at the fringes of our imagination. God's universe is greater by far than any human illusion ever taught anywhere. The alien presence is real, and it masks itself by the most ingenious method possible: incredulity. Using the absurd. The presence or injection of an absurd component into nearly every UFO or ET experience is exactly how the alien presence is able to conceal itself. For example, using UFO ship forms that appear to our eye as a cheap 1950s B-movie spaceship causes any pictures of such a ship to be laughed off as a hoax. Or another example, using sounds for their alien ships that are identical to spaceship sounds in Hollywood movies causes a cognitive confusion. Is this real or imagined? In the consciousness of nearly every person hearing such sounds. And then we have to contend with alien abductions where people experience rectal probes. Such examples of absurd facets to the UFO and ET phenomenon abound. The inability of common consciousness to identify the level of sophistication of the alien presence and its capability of disarming our rational mind using the absurd is the key barrier at hand. Not only are the aliens extremely deceptive and clever at avoiding detection, the Illuminati's alien cover-up is the most elaborate and pervasive of any lie ever told. Yet, in spite of absurd UFO and ET stories, and the deliberate, monumental attempt to cover up the alien presence, most people actually do still believe in the presence of aliens. They know that UFOs are real, and that strange things have been traversing through our atmosphere and our consciousness for a long, long time, probably forever. Because the extraterrestrial implications are extremely vast and affect every part of our spiritual life as well as our origins and destiny, any discussion of ultimate success and spiritual transformation must rationally acknowledge and explore at least the possibility of an alien presence. Certainly, even modern science is unanimous in its verdict. It is a mathematical certainty for life to exist on other worlds. There is coming a day, very soon, when great knowledge will be brought to this plane by wonderful entities who are your beloved brothers. In that time, scientific developments will bloom here greater than they ever have. What is coming forth is called the Age of God. Ramtar. As more and more research and details of UFO and ET experiences become available, thanks largely to the internet, a sobering picture emerges that transcends the boundaries of science fiction and absolutely blows the doors off conventional perspectives. Truth, indeed, is far stranger than fiction. Anyone genuinely interested in downloading the most enlightened and professionally investigated perspectives on the subject should investigate the complete works of Dr. John Mack and Dr. Stephen Greer and tune in immediately to www.fastwalkers.com and check out the Google video of the same name. Dr. John E. Mack, October 4th, 1929 to September 27th, 2004, was a Pulitzer Prize-winning American psychiatrist and professor at Harvard Medical School who, relatively late in his career, became intensely focused on the alien abduction phenomenon. Dr. Mack initially suspected that abductees were suffering from mental illness, but when no obvious pathologies could be detected in the individuals he was studying, he delved deeper into the subject matter, eventually concluding that the phenomenon was in some way real. He wrote, "Looking back at the path that brought me to my present viewpoint, I realize that one cannot begin to consider seriously something so preposterous without at least a minimal willingness to look at the possibility that our view of the universe and ways of knowing about it have indeed been incomplete and perhaps flawed. Dr. Max studied approximately 200 men and women who reported recurrent alien encounter experiences. Dr. Mack remains to this day the most esteemed academic to have studied the subject. His research and conclusions are included in two of his books, Abduction and Passport to the Cosmos, the latter containing fascinating philosophical insights into the nature of the alien presence. Dr. Stephen Greer, author of Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge, is at the forefront of research into this amazing arena of interface between humans and extraterrestrial beings. The combination of his personal experience, integrity, and street savvy, born from surviving an alcoholic father, emergency room medicine, and radionic murder attempts on his life, has sculpted Dr. Greer into quite a powerful ally for good on this planet. His years of research rubbing shoulders with individuals with access to above top secret realms of government and Illuminati operations qualify him to speak and write on the subject. Dr. Greer is blessed with not only credentials and credibility, he's also grounded in his approach. Through his Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, SETI, organization, Dr. Greer has been instrumental in helping to bring individuals out of the closet. Insiders who were involved in various aspects of the alien cover-up. These individuals, with Greer's assistance, have been empowered to appear and speak together and go onto the congressional record in order to speak officially without fear of reprisals by secret agents within the Illuminati matrix. Dr. Greer informs us that the majority of the information reaching us on all ET phenomena, including virtually all abduction reports, is being manipulated through the lens of the darkest and most twisted political intrigue ever. His conclusions emphasize that, in fact, our brothers and sisters from the stars are here to observe, study, and ultimately assist us, and that a massive and focused disinformation policy is being forced upon us via Illuminati-controlled media to convince us otherwise. The extent of the disinformation campaign almost beggars belief, as Dr. Greer chronicles the astonishing details of the reverse engineering of shot-down ET technology and the application of that technology for horrendous purposes. According to Greer, some alien abduction cases are perpetrated by sinister shadow Illuminati agents who have, at this point in time, their own reverse engineered ET technology, and have even engineered their own android clones, which look like the so-called grey aliens. Many of the cattle mutilations and other seemingly malevolent phenomena are for the specific purposes of seeding fear into the mind of mass consciousness for no other reason than the eventual goal of taking war technology into space to be pointed back upon the Earth at Earth citizens under the pretext of protecting us from what will eventually be an admitted alien presence and potential threat. The Illuminati may also be arming up space to continuously attack observational alien craft, so more reverse engineering can be done. And finally, the militarization of space allows the Illuminati to begin to protect their rulership as the Earth's masters from alien races who potentially might want to help free us, Earth's citizens. Whatever the case, The main point to digest is that our biggest threat is not Martians or Palladians, but emotionally distorted humans, ourselves. If we do create our reality, then why not choose to align our powerful creative beliefs with the best ET story ever imaginable? Why choose to believe in blood-sucking reptiles when we can believe in beautiful babes from Sirius, for example, or stunning Prince Charmings from Alpha Centauri? As always, there are positive and negative sides to all phenomena. Yet, remember, if the aliens were here to destroy us or conquer, they would have done it long ago. Consider the following safeguard. Those civilizations which are equal or behind yours cannot reach you any more than you can reach them. There is enough distance between each one to ensure that this will remain true. Those which can draw near have the consciousness to compress great distances. Aside from possible desperation or degeneration, it is not within their consciousness to exploit or to conquer mankind. I would be misleading you to imply that the galactic community is without its points of turbulence and misbehavior, for there is always free will. However, there is a rule that is genuinely true, and you can rely upon it to give you comfort. Those who could harm you cannot reach you. Those who can reach you would not likely harm you. In his great wisdom, the Creator saw fit to space all life-bearing planets far enough apart to establish this condition. This is combined with a secondary fact that all truly advanced technologies are based on principles of synchronicity, holistic patterning, and respect for the dynamics of life. The idea of marauders traveling at the speed of light and beyond simply for conquest is pure fiction. The synchronicity required for that technology simply could not be derived from a consciousness based on conflict. And that's from Jesus Speaks and Love Without End, a book by Glenda Green. The Coming of Tan. We have been fortunate to review the alien presence by the close contact we share with our friend Riley Martin, whose lifetime of continuous and unique interactions with a particular race of aliens is unparalleled. What we especially appreciate about Riley is his absence of interpretations based on fear. And since fear pervades the entire spectrum of abduction phenomena, alien visitation, mass media, government cover-ups, etc., we can only assume that those fear-generated perspectives distort the truth about the phenomenon. Riley has been psychically connected to a humanoid alien space captain named Tan, Okwa Tanjin Wan, since he was first abducted in rural Arkansas in 1953 at 7 years old. Every 11 years, Riley has been revisited by Tan and taken aboard the Great Biavian Mothership, which at present is in orbit around Saturn. When questioned about how often he is in touch with Tan psychically, he replied, 2 or 3 times a month. Riley's story is all online at www.rileymartin.org. and may also be found in his audiobook, The Coming of Tan. This may sound ridiculous to the uninitiated, but NASA has taken photographs of the mothership with the recent Cassini spacecraft, which is at this moment also in orbit around Saturn. Cassini has been transmitting images of an unexplained 40-kilometer-wide object that is glowing like a radiating egg, just behind Titan, one of Saturn's moons. This object is exactly where Riley Martin has placed the Biavian mothership. In fact, he's been telling people the ship is there for decades. According to Riley, that mothership has been in orbit in our solar system for eons. And contrary to conspiracy theorists and Illuminati spin doctors, the visitors on board that ship are simply observing and conducting experiments on the Earth, the Earth's life forms, and us. You can see NASA photographs of that ship on Riley's website. Quantum physics informs us that there is, of course, an intrinsic problem with all experiments because it is never truly possible to remain only an observer, because the observer affects the observed. Therefore, even a simple observational alien presence would affect us at every level of our consciousness, whether we know it or not. But to say that the aliens are only making conventional observations and conducting linear experiments is to oversimplify the situation, although for the most part we believe this is true. The aliens have been getting a little more involved with human affairs than is prudent. The Biavian mothership has actually been an observation and research station for many races of aliens exploring and studying our solar system. The main alien race on the mothership belonged to Riley's group, the Biavians, and as far as is known, they are running the show. Consider the situation. Tan's race, the Biavians, ascended, became enlightened, as an entire race, and instead of retreating like good alien yogis into high mountain caves on their planet to meditate on the light, they decided to build spaceships of extraordinary beauty and technology and sail bravely into the cosmos to explore exactly how great the light, God, is. Riley has been telling everybody for his entire life that the Biavians are here to help. They are our angels, our brothers, our friends, and our genetic relatives. Somehow, in some way, we share genes with our cosmic cousins. In fact, when we search our feelings, everyone knows somewhere deep inside that we are part simian, part alien, part ape, part angel. Somewhere in our past, a race of aliens genetically altered us. We side with Riley and believe that their intent was positive, although beyond the scope of their consciousness. Thus, over time, the experiment went out of control due to human tampering with dangerous interdimensional sorcery, symbolism, ritual, ceremony, sacrifice, etc. Others, like Michael Tsarion, www.michaeltsarion.com, believe that the original alien intent was negative, and this, coupled with sorcery, is why the experiment went out of control. Any way you frame it, the Illuminati have a plan to turn the inevitable universal discovery of the alien presence into yet another scam to gain more control and surveillance. Be aware. Their agenda is to weaponize outer space with so-called Star Wars technology by convincing us this is necessary due to an eventual staged phony alien attack. By cross-referencing Riley Martin's, Dr. Stephen Greer's and Dr. John Mack's experiences, testimonies and reports across a wide range of other books, magazines, videos and internet resources, we feel we can safely conclude that the aliens, cosmic angels, are extremely connected to the ancient devic energies of the Earth, Gaia, and to sensible, evolving, consciousness-expanding, Earth-friendly souls, described by Tan as children of the living waters, possessors of the staff of reason. Based on the calculated greed-directed technological misturns over the last 200 years, and the controlling menace of false masters, the Illuminati. The grand old growth forests are almost all cut down. The pristine holy rivers are polluted. The skies are filled with cooking soot. Depleted uranium weapons are being used without a second thought, and the ancient planetary devas that have filled the planet's ecosystems for millions of years with their magic are retreating due to the destruction. The great Earth is in peril. The pending danger to the planet itself has left the aliens stunned, heartbroken. Yet, in spite of this, they attempt to observe non-emotionally. We ask you not to believe, but to feel. If the belief in the Illuminati or aliens is too much to take, it is nevertheless the story, the mythology of our times. It expresses the archetypal situation we are in, the place of feeling that gives birth to the superhero. The best planet ever. The beings whom Ryder calls the Biavians are from one of the planetary systems in Taurus constellation. Their planet, Biave, has an 18,000-mile circumference, so it is slightly smaller than the Earth. But it is a paradise. It is utopia. They did it. They actually came to a collective state of self-awareness, of consciousness. They got out of a state of conflict with each other and out of conflict within themselves, and they moved into a self-regulating cycle of ascension and enlightenment. They decided to ennoble life on their planet. Now they have taken their entire culture and all of their technology and are journeying across the cosmos, checking it all out with their fleet of motherships. This appears to be an actual fact, as best as we can understand it, given our rudimentary knowledge of our overall place in the cosmos. Let's go into our feelings and see how we feel about the idea of our ultimate ascension into the stars, into God's celestial realms that await us, our ascension into heaven. This is not about believing. That's all gone now. It's beyond belief, actually. It is all about feeling. Consider the idea of a race of beings coming into consciousness, building starships, exploring every facet of life throughout the galaxy, and researching how big God really is. How do you feel when you come into communion with that idea? With all this in mind, don't we want the best planet? No alien planet is better than ours. We've got the best planet ever. We can take our competitive natures and convert this behavior to something that is beneficial to everybody and everything. And this race of beings from another world has done that. They have moved completely beyond conflict. What a concept. Just that ideal is incredible. Imagine our own planet transcending war, transcending conflict, solving every ecological threat, curing every disease and embracing harmony in every way imaginable, and then moving into the Star Trek reality we know is our destiny. All the information and technology to do this are already here, right now. We are heading to a concrescence, an imminent meeting with our future. We believe we are going to be successful and get to paradise. But you never know. The mystery keeps the future veiled. Massively exciting, yet intensely challenging times await. As we open to the perception of human interface with beings from other worlds and sense the boundaries of the playing fields of life widening, we are well advised to remain emotionally and psychically grounded by focusing on core principles, by applying the philosophies outlined in the 9 principles of living in natural magic. We come more and more into a harmonic resonance with the immense song of creation, and we get to experience the almighty blessings of grace that are sure to carry us forward in safety and wonder. All the concepts in this book are designed as tools to help us reach our enlightened future. The alien presence alone transforms our awareness. We are not talking about science fiction and video games. These are extraordinary concepts we are exploring here. The advent of what it means to be truly human is at hand. If you dare to dream, now dare to live. Acknowledge the presence of grace. Be intimate with it in your sincerity. Breathe that grace with stalwart commitment into every moment. Widen your vision and, by the way, hold on to your chakras, because the future is going to be the wildest ride ever.